Live Kabbalah is a nonprofit organization founded for the distribution of the wisdom of Kabbalah and its values. It serves to support the growing need for a spiritual movement and promotes the self-education of the wisdom of Kabbalah and therefore empowers a student to achieve his or her goals. Learning the original principles of this wisdom can reconnect us with the true values of our society, including the belief in the dignity and freedom of man, democracy, and the freedom of speech.
Shalom, everyone. Today we're going to talk about the whole story of, how can we say, the establishment of the State of Israel as a miracle, and according to the Kabbalistic writings, what's behind it, how did it happen, and even more than that, you know, once in a while we hear that some Kabbalists said that by next Passover, Mashiach is coming already. Then Passover is over, and then by the next December, by the Inca's prophecy, that's the end of the world. And the world didn't come to an end. And then by March, it's going to be like there's a prophecy of somebody who is a medium, and he got that message from special, how do you call them, those creatures from the outer space? Aliens. And then another Kabbalist guy says that, no, but Mashiach is coming to by summer, by 9 of Av, for sure. So now, you know, so probably whoever has some sense, you know that you learn not to get really serious about those warnings and the end of the world is coming, especially that the guy that is talking about the end of the world did not sell his house, did not close his banking account, and he's still going to work and he's saving money for the marriage of his daughters and sons and stuff like this, which means he's not really serious about it. Because if you think the end of the world is coming, so why are you still busy preparing for next year and the year after and for the hereafter? Okay, so in order to understand just the base, because there's a logic behind it, we have to understand the bigger picture, which is, first of all, what do you need redemption for? Like, who invented the idea? So let's see and start from the beginning. The first thing is that if we go to the writings of the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato, there's one expression, one sentence that repeats itself many times, Machshevet Abriya Leitiv LaNivraim. The thought behind the creation was to share good with the results of the creation. So, and that means so when we're talking about that the thought behind the creation is that whoever is going to be created was created for one purpose and one purpose alone, because the Creator wanted to share with us His bliss. Now, that is a great change in the history of mankind, because we have to ask the question, who started with this idea? And if you go back enough, we're going to Abraham, the patriarch, Avraham Avinu. Till Abraham, if you read the stories and the mythology and the culture of different nations around the world, the message was exactly the opposite. The message was, the gods are selfish, the gods care only for themselves, you can't trust them, they'll betray you, they don't, you can't even count, you can count on them, they can hurt you, sooner or later. Which means, evil reigns supreme. Goodness is only temporary, it's just an illusion. If everything looks good, just read any kind of all the Greek tragedy, for instance. Evil is the real thing. Goodness is only happening once in a while, and it's also an illusion. Comes Abraham and says, you got it wrong. Because the Creator is endless goodness, then goodness is eternal and evil is temporary. Can you imagine what a shift in consciousness? Being, let's say, being a follower of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Moses, and Mount Sinai Revelation, is believing that the light and goodness is stronger than darkness. Idol worshippers is basically, what's wrong about being an idol worshipper? What's wrong about it? Yeah, why is the Talmud, the Torah, is talking so badly about idol worshiper because an idol worshiper poisons his soul 24/7. Because when you tell yourself all the time that when things are good, this is only temporary, soon enough it's going to be bad, that's idol worshiping. So now, after we understand that good is the real thing and evil is only an illusion, and if there is kind of evil, that's not going to reign too long. Now the question is like this. So how long would it take till it's going to be good? Okay, I got it. I have total emunah, total trust in the Creator. I know things are going to be great. How long would it take? Isn't that a normal question for a human being? Okay, I believe. I have faith. I have emunah. I'm so connected to the idea, you have no idea. But, you know, there's a little question. How long would that take? And not just how long would they take in a personal way, because, you know, even in the personal thing, things get better sometimes, and then the other things get worse, and finally everybody dies. So the question is, in the big picture, when is it going to be eternally good? So, if we want to understand that, now we can understand many things in the Mishnah and in the Talmud. And it says as follows. In most of these scripts, there's a very clear message. The world has been created for 7,000 years only. Okay? Which is divided to 6,000 years of working on fixing ourselves and improving ourselves, and 1,000 years of Shabbat. Shabbat celebrations. Now, how do we understand that? There is a very important article in the Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot, number 3, section 15, which is part of it, are very, very, very famous. Most people don't get it, though. Rabbi Akiva is saying, Hakol tzafui v'arishut netuna uvetov ha'olam nidon. Everything is predicted, however you have free will. And most people do not add the rest of it, which is the world is always going to the good. Isn't that what we just said? Right? What do you mean Hakol tzafui, everything is predicted? Yeah, we have free will. We have free will about, you know, going right and left, up and down, but on the big scale, we do not have any free will. What does it mean? Let's explain it this way. The sages are saying, if the Creator is endless good, and He created us for one purpose alone, which is that we will have the ability to enjoy that goodness, do we have a free will to suffer for eternity? No. We do not have any free will about it. We can arrange ourselves some sufferings and misery for a short while within the limited time of the 6,000 years. But on the long run, nobody has a free will to get out of the Creator's promise that everybody is going to be happy. This cannot be changed. This, we have no free will about. Which means, Hakol Tzafui, oh, we can get there using that road on that road. We can use the easy road, the hard road. We can use a longer road, a scenic road, a happy road, a miserable road. But finally, all the roads lead to one place, which is Shabbat and big celebration. Okay, that's the basic of Jewish theology. If you understand that, you understand everything. All the Jewish, Judeo-Christian idea, which is that human beings deserve to be happy because they were created for that purpose and that purpose alone. And that means that being miserable is against manufacturer's orders. Okay? Now we go to this next section, section 16. Hu haya omer, he was saying, Rabbi Akiva, Hakol natun be'eravon. What does it mean, Hakol Natun Be'eravon? There, everything has a guarantee. What guarantee? Say, Rabbi Ashlag, the author of the Perush HaSulam on the Zohar, the Sulam on the Zohar, he says, what do you think, that the Creator let us come to this world of darkness and confusion and so on without guaranteeing himself that we'll go back home? Of course he guaranteed himself. There's no way he would let us go play God on this planet without having a guarantee that we'll come back. What's the guarantee? Umetzuda purusa al kol ha'chaim. Metzuda in the language of the Mishnah means a net, like a fish net. There's a net of rules that is spread all over life. You can't run away from that net. And what is the net? It says a very simple. And that's a very, also again, I think every Israeli knows that part by heart. Hachanut ptucha, v'chen v'ani makif, v'pinkas patuach, v'yad kotevet. The store is open. The storekeeper is giving you on credit. The book is open. Everything you take is being written down. Okay? V'kol ha-rotze la-lilvot yavo v'ilve. Whoever wants to borrow can come and borrow. In modern language, life is like a huge supermarket. Somebody who lived all his life in a little town like the style of the towns of the 50s and 60s, right? And you go to the grocery store, and then the storekeeper is standing there and you ask, what do you need? And you know, I need half a bread, and I need 200 grams of cheese. And the storekeeper takes from the shelves everything you need, puts it for you, packs it up, and gives it to you. Now, let's say you go to a supermarket, and then you are in shock. You know, you go to like this kind, Costco's and Sam's Club and places like this. People go with huge carts and they pull things from the shelves and put it on the cart. And somebody that lived in this little town says like, what are they doing? They just take things from the shelf, whatever they want, let's grab it. And he runs for the, you know, for the grab. But on the way out, now think about it. On the way out, even today, there are already supermarkets. You can scan the barcodes and get out and pay, right? Can you imagine soon enough, it's going to be scanned automatically and you're going to be charged directly to your credit card. Now think about that. You're getting out of the supermarket and you don't see anybody taking money from you. You just charge directly. You know what I'm saying? That's what life is about, says Rabbi Akiva. Well, the life is like a big supermarket. Whatever you take, you have to pay for. No free lunches. What if you don't bother to pay? Then the next line says, "Va'gabayim machzirim tadir bechol yom." Gabayim are the ones, the collectors. They go every day to people's homes, and they nifraim min ha'adam midato v'shelo midato. They make you pay if you want it or not. You know, so if you know that whatever you have to pay for, so you prepare the cash when they knock on your door. Here it is. If you're not preparing, they grab the fridge, then they grab another thing, till, you know, you pay. If you want it or not, you go to pay. You're going to pay. Ve'yesh lahem al ma shismachu. And then it says, "V'yesh lahem al ma shismochu." They know what they're doing. Everything is registered. V'adin din emet, and the judgment is true. And then the last line is very important. V'hakol metukan liseuda, and everything is prepared for the meal. What meal? You know what the sages are saying. When all of the pain and suffering is over, then the Creator is going to make a big feast to celebrate with all of humanity. And what we're going to eat in that feast? From the buffalo's meat and the Leviathan. Right? That's a big legend. Because, are we going to eat these animals? I'm not so sure, but it's still the expression that's saying there's going to be a big party and everybody's going to show up. Why? There's no way that the Creator created somebody to be miserable forever, because that's a problem of the creator, the manufacturer, not of the product, right? If there's a malfunctioning of the product, the problem is with the producer, not with the product. And God forbid, if the creator is endless, we are also destined to be complete and perfect, each one of us. What an amazing concept. But that's a concept that is the base of Judaism, which is the whole thing that the human being was born perfect, will become perfect. You just see imperfections on the way because you have to earn the perfection by yourself. Now, and that's why we can read in the Tractate Sanhedrin in the Talmud, page 97, Tana Deve Eliyahu, 6,000 Shana Havei Alma, the world would exist for 6,000 years. 2,000 Tohu, 2,000 years of chaos. 2,000 Torah, the word Tohu means mentally chaos. Tehiya, wondering. It's like humanity in the first 2,000 years. Nobody knew really what's going on. We're going to go into it. 2,000 Torah, 2,000 years of Torah, and 2,000 Yimot Mashiach, and 2,000 years, days of Messiah, preparation for Messiah. And to the detail, we understand, basically, if you get the idea, it's like if the world was created of 6 days and then Shabbat, humanity was created for 6,000 years for work and 1,000 years of Shabbat. Can you see the correlation? You will see it all along the way. How does it work? So if you're talking in the Hebrew calendar, and by the way, we are now in the year 5776, which means we are Friday afternoon. Okay? If we're saying that 6,000 years, every 1,000 years is like one day of the week, we are now Friday afternoon. We'll get exactly to the details soon enough. Okay? First 2,000 years, just a second. Didn't we learn in school that the world was created billions of years ago? And did you learn that, you know, the dinosaurs were 120 million years ago? How would that fit into 5776? One thing that is very important to understand. With all of these wise guys that teach about evolution, they have missed one little detail, but very important. It's called the uncertainty principle. And the uncertainty principle. An uncertainty principle says, if a tree fell in the forest and nobody was there, it did not make a sound. And although it does not sound logical, this is what the way it is. And quantum physics says what is logical is not real. Which means, you see it many times in the Talmud, in many, many laws in Judaism, if nobody witnessed it, you're not so sure it happened. Which means, how many years humanity is witnessing time since the creation of Adam and Adam's sin? And then, so when we counting, we are counting, according to modern physics, in the most safest way. We can count only how long we count. What happened before? If there was no human mind to count, there's no counting. So all the billions of years before, that is an assumption that it was the time work then as it works today. No quantum physicist agrees to that. As the Jewish sages, they said, we can mathematically, just for the calculation, we push all of these billions of years into one imaginary year. That's a year zero. Okay? Which starts, and God said, let there be light, and it finishes with the sin of Adam. How long did that take? Why didn't that take a week? We have a little problem with that. You know why? On the first day, what is it saying? There was a night, there was a day, one day. On the second day, there was a night, well, there was a day, second day, right? Just a second. How come you have a night and a day? Sunset, sunrise, sunset, sunrise. Don't we have a little problem with that? Because the sun was created only on the fourth day. Never ask yourself, like, how was there was first day, second day, third day? How could there be night and... you'll realize there's a whole course we can just give about it. So Judaism stays on the safe side. We count, how long do we count? What happened before? Since there was nobody to measure, you can't risk that you know how long did it take. Because you have no proof that time existed the same way it does today, before there was a human consciousness of time, human awareness of time. So we count history. The first 2,000 years of history are the 2,000 years of chaos and wondering. Tohu. I wonder what's going on. What is it? Humanity is learning, trying to figure out who are we, why are we here, and what's the way to live in the best way without finding real answers. That's the first 2,000 years. But that was going to change. In a very special year, 1948, Abraham is born. That was the date he was born, 1948 in the Hebrew calendar. Okay. Now, Abraham is born, and the sages are saying that around the age of 50, he starts to get the idea of what life is about. So, that is around the year 2000. So the year 2000 is the shift, the first human being really starting to get the idea that we're here for a certain reason. And this is what we should do about it. So that's the beginning, the year 2000, of 2 years, 2,000 years of Torah. Which means 2,000 years of learning what life is about and who are we. And where, what is the goal of life. So, the next 2,000 years, as we said, till the year 4,000. The year 4,000 is 240 in the Christian era. 240 in the Christian era. This is the time that the Mishnah was sealed and the Zohar was completed, which means the Torah, which means Torah, Nevi'im, prophets, the writings, and the commentaries, and the Mishnah, and the Zohar. It's all complete. Now, we just have to learn it and understand it much better. But it's complete by these 2,000 years. What happens now from the year 4,000 till the year 5,000, from 240 Christian era CE to 1240 CE, this is the fifth millennium. It was called by the Kabbalists, if you read the Kabbalists in the ancient times, the dark millennium. We call it the Dark Ages. But we call it after it happened already. They know it's coming. So you understand why everything had to be written down in the Mishnah, the Zohar, the Talmud. They knew the dark era is coming and you have to hide and write down so it doesn't get lost. So they prepared for that. And by the end of that time, we're talking about 1240, on the year 1240 in the CE, this is when the Dark Ages starting to takes another 250 years, but the Dark Ages are starting to complete themselves. And in the year 1270, that's when the Zohar is being revealed, because the decree was that nobody should know about it during the fifth millennium. So the Zohar was revealed 30 years later. Okay? And now from the year 5000, which is 1240, till the year 2240, that's the sixth millennium, which is also called the millennium of the Messiah, the Messianic era. But this sixth millennium is also divided into many parts, so we're going to see that. Okay? And then when we celebrate 2240 in a common era, then we start the millennium of Shabbat. Any questions till now? Everybody understands? Okay. Now, we talk coming to the sixth millennium. The sixth millennium, we go into, you know, better resolution, because that's our millennium. We live in this millennium and to see how it works. Now, this is equivalent to the sixth day. Now, we know that in the Jewish calendar, the day is divided into four parts. Sunset, that's when the day starts, right? If somebody gets married Tuesday night, in the Ketubah, it's going to be said, Bervi'i b'Shabbat, on the fourth day of the week. Right? Because when is Shabbat starting? On midnight or at sunset? Sunset. Sunset, right? The holiday starts on sunset. Okay, now, so the the sixth millennium starts on sunset. The day starts on sunset. Now, the first part of the day, the first quarter, from sunset till midnight, this is the evening. Okay? That's when we pray Ma'ariv, the prayer of Arvit, the evening prayer. After midnight, that's Tikkun Chatzot. That's a time to study Kabbalah and to do this special prayer that is called Tikkun Chatzot, the correction after midnight. Sunrise, this is a time for Shacharit, the morning prayer. Noon, it's time of morning is over, and now it's time for the afternoon prayer, which is Mincha. So you see the four intervals, which is quarter of the day, when it's equal day and night. Is that clear? Okay. Now we see that the Kabbalists divide the sixth millennium the same way you divide the day in the Hebrew calendar. So, of course, the year 5000, which is 1240 CE, this is 6 p.m., sunset, and the beginning of the sixth day. Is that clear? So that year was 1240. Now, or 5000. As we said, the Zohar was revealed 30 years later. But then, the most important thing, we have to wait till midnight. 240 years later, right? 240. 1000 is one day. Quarter of a millennium, that's 250 years. 250 years later, which is 5250. Or in the common era, that's the year 1240 plus 250, 1490. 1490 is midnight. This is the time to study Kabbalah. This is the best time to study Kabbalah. What happened in 1490? Nothing really. 1492, that's expulsion from Spain. And also, it's known in modern history, this is a time that humanity is getting out of the Dark Ages and starting to explore the planet, right? With Columbus leaving to the New World and Vasco da Gama finding their way around Africa. Okay? So that was a symbol, because it was not just these two gentlemen's voyage. It was all of mankind starting to learn, get out of the box and start to learn. There's so much to learn. That was exactly on schedule, 2 years late. But you'll see that's getting better as the time passing by. So, what happens then? Because it's time to study Kabbalah, all the Kabbalists in the next following decades declare, from now on, all the limitation on studying Kabbalah in the Zohar are over, and from now on, from the year 1490, there's no decree anymore, everybody has to study Kabbalah, young and old, men and women, even in the marketplace. Not in secret anymore. And all the great Kabbalists say so. And some people say, but you know, if you study Kabbalah, something will happen to you. Says the Ramak, Rabbi Moses Cordovier, who was the head of the Kabbalists in Tzfat before Rabbi Ezra Gloria. He says it very clearly in his commentary on Parashat Ba'alot Chai in the Zohar. The Zohar is the only tool for bringing redemption to the world, and you have to study Zohar. What if a big rasha, an evil man, will get and grab the Zohar and read it? Says the Ramak, Rabbi Moses Cordovero, it will either change him to become a tzaddik, a righteous man, or en knisato knisa, nothing happened. He won't get anything. It's like there's a safety valve. You cannot get from the Zohar what you do not supposed to get. So, no excuses anymore. You go and study Zohar. The Ramak also wrote a book which is called Or Ne'erav, which is pleasant light. And he explains in very lengthy why all the people who are against the study of Kabbalah in the Zohar, why they're making huge mistake. And that's not studying Kabbalah will cost us a big price. Okay, so the golden age of Sfat, the golden age of Kabbalah is starting on that time, which is just after 1490, especially during the whole 16th century, and in Sfat, but the rest of the Jewish world, Kabbalah reigns supreme, except one place, Europe. At that time, not many Jews lived in Europe. Why? It was a horrible place for Jews to live. Jews were persecuted. They were forced to convert to Christianity. There was Inquisition all over Europe. It was a nightmare to be Jewish in Europe. Jews were running away from Europe, especially to the Ottoman Empire, especially to Eretz Israel, Greece, Turkey of today, Egypt, and so on. There was not a nice place to live in Europe at that time. And to be Jewish was a trouble. Talking about Kabbalah was even double trouble. You can get burned to the stake for witchcraft or something like this. Astrology, reincarnation, you kidding? During the Inquisition? No way. So Kabbalah in Europe was hidden. Only in the later on, we had to wait 250 more years. Why? Midnight. You have to wait till sunrise. When is sunrise? 1740. What happened on 1740? Somebody knows? Industrial Revolution. What does it mean, Industrial Revolution? If 1492 was opening the world and everybody can start learning about, nobody can read it as long as there's no mass production. Nobody can deliver it when there's no traveling by the steam engine. To deliver by boats, by trains, right? You can print. Print just started around 1500, right? And then, sooner enough, the Zohar was printed in 1540 in Italy first. Okay? It had to have a special permission from the Pope, which is a very weird thing, how they got him to permit. Okay? Now, but 1740, that's a different ball game. Industrial Revolution means that people work, they have wages, they can buy books in the bookstore. Right? If you understand one thing, the whole story of redemption, you read Isaiah, you read Jeremiah, depends on knowledge. You know, everybody knows this in Isaiah 11, when it says, and when the wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard with the sheep, right? Nobody bothers to read the end. Isaiah says how it's going to happen. Ki mal'a ha'aretz de'a et Hashem kamayim la'im lechasim. When the earth is full with the knowledge of God, like water covered the sea. Which is, what is the condition for the world peace? Knowledge. And what is knowledge? Kabbalah. Zohar. That is knowledge. Okay? That's what all the books are saying. Now, 5500 or 1740 CE, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Sun is shining. The world is starting a new era. What's so special about this new era? It's not just the world is, mass production, which means everybody can own a book and read. Right? I don't know if you know, but till the 17th century in Europe, whoever translated the Bible from Latin to a language everybody can understand was executed. It was their sentence. Why? The church didn't want people to know what's written in the book. Somebody had to tell you. And he told you exactly what he wanted you to know. Right? So we are talking about the age of knowledge. People start to print the books. Okay? Now, what else happens at that time? In order to read the books, you need to live in a different regime. Democracy starts around the world. You start, it takes them time, but still, all the politics is starting to change, so people have the right to have access to wisdom, have the right to read books. That's not so common, right? We look at it, I can read any book I want. It was not that, till really late. Okay? So, 1740 is the Industrial Revolution, 1776 American independence. Then you have French Revolution, 1789. It's all following 1740. And there's also the Hasidic movement around 1740. That's also. And the special... Now, what does the Zohar say about it? The Zohar in Parashat Vayera says, "Uveshesh shana la'elef ha'shishi." And the commentators are saying, on the 6th century, of the sixth millennium, the gates of wisdom above and below will open up and will flood the world. We are in the age of knowledge, right? Now we are in the age of plenty. Everything is flooded with knowledge. When that flood starts, 1740, which is sunrise, 17, which is 5500. Okay? So as we said, all the revolutions, political revolutions that little by little allowed people to have access to knowledge as they want without any censorship. And as we said also, we have also the Hasidic movement in Europe. Finally, what was the Hasidic movement? All the Kabbalists in Europe that were underground got out of the closet. That's basically what Hasidic movement was about. If you read the original writings of the main Hasidic teachers and rabbis, without learning the Zohar, you have no idea what they write about. They're all based on Kabbalah. They're all based on the Zohar and the writings of the Ari. At the same time, the Sephardi Kabbalah reaches its peak during the 18th century, around the time the Rashash, Rabbi Shalom Sharabi, and Orach Chaim HaKadosh, and many more great sages. We're talking about 18th century. Okay. But now we have to get to the next step, and we start to get even in a more, what's the word? The resolution is starting to be even more close. Rabbi Ezra Kluya, he explains from the Zohar also that on Shabbat, this level of our consciousness, which is in the level of Malchut, the level of this world, this Olam Hazeh, this world, on Shabbat, it raises up and goes to the upper world. But when does that start? 5 hours after sunrise on Friday. Which means, you know, if you live in Jerusalem or in Israel, you start to smell Shabbat coming already Friday before noontime, right? Friday before noontime, you already start to feel Shabbat crawling on you, right? And then you start to get, oh, we have to prepare for Shabbat. Why do we feel that? Because there's a cosmic transformation 5 hours after sunrise on Friday. The Sefirot are starting to move up. It's like an airplane on the runway that is going up and up and up, and then it takes off. When is takeoff moment? The lighting of the candles of Shabbat. That's takeoff moment. Right? So some sages ask, so when is the Shabbat is starting to come in? That's very easy. Why is it easy? 5 hours. You calculate 5 hours. Okay? If 1,000 years, it's 24 hours. 1 hour is 41 years and 2/3 of a year, 8 months. Correct? Is that clear to everyone? 1 day is 1,000 years. So 1 hour is 41 years and 8 months. How many are 5 hours? Multiply by eight, by five. What do you get? 208 years. So take 1740, add up 208. What do you get? 48. 1948 was the time Shabbat was starting to come in. And on a Friday afternoon, May 48, Ben-Gurion announces the establishment of the State of Israel. Friday afternoon. Right? Exactly right on time. Everything was calculated in advance. Why? There was no chance to do something else. That's how it's calculated. Okay? Now, what's the next stage? We need to wait to come to noontime. Noontime is an hour later. So, an hour later, that gives us the year 5750, which is around 1990, but here it becomes so accurate that it's not even late in 1 day. You have to understand, the Hebrew year starts a few months before the before the Roman year, right? So the Hebrew year starts on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah 5750. Like the Vilna Gaon said, like many other Kabbalists said, the whole world is shifting big time. Somebody remembers what happens on Rosh Hashanah 89, September
89? The fall of communism.
The fall of communism. What was communism about? The Iron Curtain. What was it about? No access to wisdom, no access to Judaism. You cannot study whatever you want. Censorship. You are a slave of the government. Where? Huge part of the world. It was not just Russia. It was the whole Soviet group, right? Soviet bloc. It was all over the world. There were dictatorships. And more than that, we'll come to it. On Rosh Hashanah, there were riots in East Germany, in Romania, in the Eastern Bloc are coming to its peak. By Sukkot, it's over. The walls of Berlin are falling apart. And whoever lived on that time, that was magic. That you cannot understand. Right on the spot. Why? It's already Friday noon. We have to move on. We have to move on. Wisdom has to be accessible everywhere. You can't stop wisdom. Not just this, the Talmud says, and the Zohar, that in the beginning, the days of Messiah will be looked like no slavery to other kingdoms. If you look at that, since Rosh Hashanah 89, it's the first time in the history of Jews since the destruction of Jerusalem. The Jews are not slaves to any nation, any place around the world. First time, right? All the regimes that, remember, there were Jews behind the Iron Curtain who couldn't get out, millions of them, because they were not allowed to move and to do and to learn and even to travel wherever they wanted. They were slaves. That was over. As the prophecy said, no shi'abud malchuyot, no nation will enslave the Jewish people anymore from that day on. On the day. Okay? So now, we will learn, basically, you're free. You're free to go. You're free to do whatever you want. Right? That's new. Remember that. People look at it like, oh, that's the way it should be. The last 2,000 years, most of it, it was not like this. Till 26 years ago, right? It's only 26 years. The Jews all over the world are free to learn, to study, to go, to come and go, whatever they want. Only 26 years. And we think it was like this everywhere, all the time. No, it was not. You get used to good stuff, right? Okay. Noontime. Not just the wall of Berlin fall in 1990. Cellular phone is starting and the internet is starting. Didn't we say that the age of Aquarius is a time of wisdom and knowledge? Everybody has the access. You can read today any book of Kabbalah on your cell phone. Right? There are thousands of internet sites that give you all aspects of Kabbalistic teachings from wherever. You go to any Judaica store around the world and you find books about Kabbalah. They were hidden. They were treasured. Nobody, only a few people could read them. Today, the amount of books about Kabbalah being printed every day, every year, are beyond all the previous centuries together. The gates are open. The gates of wisdom. Now, another thing about our era. Maybe we think that maybe this calculation is based on... It's not based on anything real. Okay? So there's another way to describe our generation. So in the Zohar Parashat Vayera, Perusha Sulam, verse 200, there's a whole story about two sages talking about the birth of Ishmael and the implications it's going to have on the last days. As follows. And one of them says, and Abraham said, Abraham prayed to God, Lo Ishmael yichye lefanecha, please give all my blessings to Ishmael. And although the Creator was telling me, you're going to have a son, Yitzchak is coming, Abraham could not see that. Abraham still attached to his son Ishmael. Till finally the Creator had no choice anymore, and he said, I listen to you about Ishmael, he is going to be blessed too. And the result was that when Abraham was circumcised, Ishmael was circumcised too on the same day. Isaac was born only a year later. Uvore, and come and see and listen carefully. 400 shana amad ha-memuneh shel bnei Ishmael uvikesh lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Zohar says that every nation around the world has a guardian angel of that nation. That guardian angel is responsible for the history of the nation, and the guardian angel is the one that dominates the leaders of that nation and puts in their mouth whatever they say and whatever they decide. So that angel of the Ishmaelite nation for 400 years stood in front of the Creator and asked, but it can look also that he asked for 400 years. What does it mean? We'll see later. Amar lo, he said to him, Mishani mol yesh lo chelek b'shimcha. So said that angel of Ishmael, whoever is circumcised, doesn't he have a share in your name, in your holy name? So Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu ken. So the Creator said yes. Amar lo Ishmael sheni mol, lama ein lo chelek b'cha kmo Yitzchak. Ishmael was circumcised. Why doesn't he have the same share like Isaac in your name? Amar lo, so the Creator answered, Zeni mol karoi v'kitikunam v'zei nokach. V'olod ela she'elu midabkim b'karoi l'shmona yamim. V'elu chokim b'meni od kama yamim. Amar lo v'im koze kivan she'nimo lo ela sachar tov hazeh. So the Creator said, you know, the descendants of Isaac, the Jews, they circumcise on the eighth day and they do exactly as it's being told. Mila, Priya, Mitzitza, all the stages the way it's been told. The Muslims, the Ishmaelites, he says, he doesn't say Muslim, he says Ishmael, they circumcise but not that way, and later on they don't make sure it's going to be on the eighth day. Anyway, says the angel, but they are circumcised. They should have a share in your name also. Don't they deserve it? Oy lo tozman shenolad Ishmael ba'olam v'nimol. Remember, these words were written 2,000 years ago in the Zohar. Oy, you know what's oy? Oy to that time that Ishmael was born and circumcised. What did the Creator do? He separated the Ishmaelites. Irchik bnei Ishmael mitvekut ha'elyon. He separated the children of Ishmael from attaching to the name of God in the upper worlds. V'natan lahem chelek lemata ba'aretz ha'kdosha. And he gave them a share in the Holy Land. They have a right on the Holy Land because they are circumcised. Bishvil hamila shelahem. And then it goes like this. Remember, when the Zohar was written, it was 2nd century Common Era. At that time, it was the time of the Emperor Adrian. He made a census in the Roman Empire. From that census, it came out that 10% of the population of the Roman Empire lived in Eretz Israel, lived in Israel. 10%. Can you imagine? From the British island till Mesopotamia, all of Southern Europe and North Africa, all the Middle East, 10% of the population lived in this country. How do you know? You look at the projects of King Herod, and you ask yourself, where did he have so much money from? That was a very populated, rich country. Now think, what did they say? ועתידים בני ישמעאל לשלוט על הארץ הקדושה זמן הרבה בשעה שירקה מכל. And the children of Ishmael are going to rule the Holy Land, but it's going to be empty when they rule this country. Can you imagine? The country was so populated, and they said, time will come, and when Ishmael is going to rule in this country for a long time, the country is going to be empty. כמו שהמילה שלהם יריקה בשלמות, the same way their circumcision is empty without completion. והם יעקבו את בני ישראל לשוב ממקומם. And they will prevent, they will delay the returning of the children of Israel back to their place. עד שישלם הזכות של בני ישראל, till their זכות, their merit will be over. Now we know, Ishmaelites ruled in this country, in the Holy Land, for many years. But remember, the angel asked for 400 years. And if you look at it, the last Ishmaelite rule in Israel was the Ottoman Empire. They took over Jerusalem in the year 1517, and the British threw them out on the year 1917. How many years? Exactly 400 years. 1517 till 1917. Exactly as the Zohar says. And they will delay, you know very well, as long as the Ottoman Empire ruled in this, in the Holy Land, Jews were not allowed to buy lands. They were not allowed to, they were delaying the coming of the Jews back, although they wanted. The year 1917, there are only 60,000 Jews in Israel. 30 years later, there are already 600,000. 68 years later, there's almost 6.5 million. So, you see what the Zohar is saying? The country was empty under Ishmaelite rule. The time is up, 1917. Jews are starting to come back. Now what's the next stage? We're witnessing all of this happening. And the next stage is, ועתידים בני ישמעאל לעורר מלחמות גדולות בעולם. And then the children of Ishmael will awaken big wars around the whole world. We're just in the middle of that happening. Right? ויתאספו בני אדום. Who are they going to fight? Especially against Edom. Who is Edom? The Western world. Here we got it. We're just in the middle of that. That's, by the way, the Armageddon war. This is Armageddon. We're in the midst of Armageddon. What is Armageddon? In Hebrew, Gog u'Magog. My teacher used to say, you know, what is Gog u'Magog? It's coming from the word Hagigim. You know what's Hagigim? Thoughts. It's a psychological war. You call it terror. Terror means not weapons, psychological war. That's terror. When you make people afraid, then they make mistakes, then they create hatred, and then the anarchy comes in, and then you just come and grab on the remains of the culture and you terrorize. That's terror. So, if you understand, it's not a normal war. That's why the Western world does not understand. It's not a war you can win, not by machine guns, not by tanks, not by any technology. The war is happening where? In the media, on the internet. All what the war is about is to create terror, to create anarchy, so civilization will fall apart. And then somebody else can come and take the grab. That's what the war is about. And what another thing that it says, ויערכו מלחמה אחת על הים, אחת על היבשה, on the sea, on land, ואחת סמוך לירושלים, and next to Jerusalem. In this war that we're facing right now, the word Jerusalem appears more than just here and then. It's all over. Why Jerusalem? The centerpiece of the whole Armageddon war is Jerusalem. Everybody says, you look at ISIS, you look at all of them are saying, the next thing is, we are all going to Jerusalem. Why Jerusalem? What do you want from Jerusalem? This is how it is. וימשלו אלו אל אלה, and they will control this one and it, and וארץ הקדושה לא תימסר לבני אדום. And the Holy Land is not going to be given to the Edomites. What is that about? What the Edomites, we said? The West. The West is still looking about taking over Jerusalem. How do we know? Does the United States of America recognize Israel's rule and sovereignty over Jerusalem? Not till today. they still plan somehow to take the control over Jerusalem. The consulate in Jerusalem is not under the control of the embassy in Tel Aviv. It's directly under the control of the State Department. They, till 2016, they still didn't give up. The United Nations, all the whole world, we are going to come back. We're going to take over. Okay, here it is. Black and white. That's a Zohar. And then, what's the next thing? And later after that, the king of Persia is going to rule. And Veitol Malchuyot Gdolot, and he's going to take over big kingdoms. We're just seeing that happening in front of our eyes. Iraq fell already. Syria fell already. Yemen, all of this under Iranian rule. Why? Vehu yishlot al eretz hakodesh tresa chodashim. Because they want to take over the Holy Land. They say so every day. Our goal is to destroy Israel and to take over the Holy Land at Jerusalem. Isn't that what they say every day? And you look around and you see how US and Europe and the whole world is signing contracts with Iran, and you're just like, what is happening to you guys? Why are you giving them the power? Why you let them become an empire? A superpower? A local superpower? Whatever. Why are you letting them to have these ballistic missiles and nuclear energy? It's part of the story. And he's going to rule v'yishlot al eretz hakodesh treisar chodashim. God forbid. The Iranians, it says the Zohar, are planning to take over the Holy Land. And they are going to take over, God forbid, for 12 months. We're not there yet. How are we going to prevent that from happening? Soon. But that is not a must. V'yishlot v'yarog rabim, and he's going to take rule and kill many. And especially to kill Mashiach ben David, ben Yosef. There's a theory of two Messiah theory. You find it in many places, in the Talmud and in the Zohar. Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. The Messiah, son of Joseph, and the Messiah, son of David. What is the difference? Why do we need two Messiahs? And the Zohar explains like this. You have to understand that there's a mystical meaning behind it. Joseph is the son of Rachel. Rachel symbolizes the physical, visible, sensual world. The world that our logic can understand. Which means the redemption will start with a process that everybody can see, everybody can feel, and the state of Israel, by many sages, is Mashiach ben Yosef. The Mashiach, the son of Joseph. Why? Everybody can see there's a state. Everybody can see there's a passport. It says the state of Israel. Everybody can see there's Israeli army. Everybody can see there's an Israeli sovereignty and independence. That everybody can see. Jewish people are immigrating, making aliyah, coming to Israel. Everybody, that's Mashiach ben Yosef. That's the first stage. But the next stage is Mashiach ben David. And David is the son of Leah. Leah, her eyes were always veiled with tears. Did she really cry every day, the whole day? We don't know. But Leah is a symbol of the world of above. Rachel, she was beautiful. Everybody could see her. She is the symbol of this world. That's why she's buried where? On the road, on the highway, where everybody is. Leah is buried with the patriarchs, in the cave of Machpelah, nobody can reach that place. Leah is a symbol of the world to come, the upper world, the world beyond the five senses, beyond logic. So what is a real Mashiach? Is when humanity reaches that level of spiritual awakeness, which is beyond the five senses and limitation of the five senses. And that's called Mashiach ben David. So the first stage is Mashiach ben Yosef. And that's why the danger is right now. Is Iran and all the proxies of Iran. One goal they have. They exist for one purpose and one purpose alone. says the Zohar, to take over Israel and to destroy Mashiach ben Yosef, which is the physical redemption of the Jewish people of the new era. That's their goal, and they say it. They say, our job is one thing, to destroy Zionism. There's not going to be a Jewish state, there's not going to be Zionism. Jews are going, only few Jews maybe are going to stay in it. That's exactly what they say. And that's what the Zohar says. After that, he will fall. אחר מכן ייפול ויקבלו את המלוכה עם ישראל. And the power will go to the hands of the nation of Israel. So, that last sentence, we didn't see it. Everything else till we said, you know, I'm teaching that for 30 years already. When I started to teach that, most of it didn't happen yet. A big part of it did not happen yet. Now, most of it is already behind us. So, but today is the day, Memorial Day, Yom HaZikaron. And that's very important, and the Zohar talks about it too. And it speaks about Parashat Vayechi, Zohar Parashat Vayechi, and it says over there, in Parashat Vayechi, that Jacob, Israel, is calling Joseph, and he says to him, Vani bevoi mi Padan, and me, when I came from Padan, from Aram, Meta alai Rachel baderech, Rachel died on the road. Rabbi Abba opened. He quotes from Jeremiah 31. Ko amar Hashem, so said God, Kol barama nishma, a voice have been heard, Rachel crying for her sons. What says it later on? And then finally, God says to Rachel, Min'i kolech mibechi, don't cry anymore. Ve'naich midima, your voice from crying and your eyes from tears. Ki yesh sachar lifulatech, there's a prize for your action, which is Veshavu banim legvulam, and the sons came already back to their place. Says the Zohar, Lo amar vayeshuvu. He didn't say they will come back. It says they already came back. It's a done deal. Veshoel. So the Zohar is asking, why is Jacob telling Joseph about the death of Rachel? Vechilo yada Yosef shimo meta, alo haya ima sham kshemeta. Joseph was there with her when she died. Why did Jacob have to mention him that? ולמה היה צריך יעקב לספר לו את זה? הוא משיב אל היומר ישראל היום. We're not talking about Jacob the man. We're talking about the high divine Israel. Israel, says the Zohar, yes, it's a name of a person that lived, Jacob. Israel also is the name, one of the names of God. Because Israel is the power of the upper world. How do you know? Take the word Israel, and you have an aleph for Abraham, and a sin for Sarah. You have a yud for Yitzchak, and you have a reish for Rivka. You have a yud for Yaakov, and you have a reish for Rachel, and a lamed for Leah. Three fathers, four mothers. That's the word Israel. So when it says, Ko amar Israel, so said Israel, it speaks that was God's word. And what did they say? It meant like this. כשנבוא מן גאולת ישראל, when the redemption will happen and will come back from the exile, from the lands that we hate, back home. תתעורר השכינה, the Shekhinah, the divine presence will wake up, which is Rachel. ותתעורר כנסת ישראל ותערוך מלחמה עם העמים. It's not that the Jews are going to fight against the nations. It's the Shekhinah fighting against the nations. But there's going to be a war. V'yamutu mehem Yisrael b'milchama zo. And people of Israel will die in that war. V'yitkavu le'at le'at levo'al ha'aretz. The land is not going to be given at once, little by little, stage by stage. It's not going to be at once. There are going to be wars after wars after wars till we take back what belongs to us. Yomar la Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then God will tell the Shekhinah. While the Shekhinah is crying for her sons, which sons? That die on the war coming back to Israel. Don't be afraid, says God. Al tifchadi sachar yesh lahem labanim shemetu b'milchama al shmi. All of these that will be killed in the wars of Israel, says the Zohar. God promises the Shekhinah. They have a prize. And the prize, the one that will be killed on the wars of Israel, all of them will resurrect to the resurrection of the dead. All of them will reach total completion of their souls. And the ones who won't die, and they will come and sit and live in that land. Kvar Shavu, I promise you, they came back already. It's done deal. Nobody can stop that from happening. Vehem Shemetu, and the ones who will be killed on the war, will come back in the resurrection, all of them. Two thousand years ago, these words were written. So when it says that Israel is saying, Meta alai Rachel, Rachel died for me, she died on my name, which means, Meta al yichud shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of that sons that will die on the wars on Israel, that will be the biggest Kiddush Hashem. Because as Israel wins one battle after one battle, the name of God around the world is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And people's belief and faith in God is changing all over the world because everybody, you know, wars happen all over the planet. Little battle in Israel, the whole world is watching. That's Kiddush Hashem. That's the biggest Kiddush Hashem ever in history. That will be on the way to come back to Israel. Because all the ones who die on these wars, that's Kiddush Hashem. When finally we get control over the land, nobody will die anymore. So, amazing. But then, so how do we relate to the state of Israel and how it's structured? Because you look at the state of Israel, and you know what? It doesn't look like such a very spiritual place. You talk to Israelis, most of them don't look like they feel they are, you know, close to redemption. Right? Rav Ashlag explained that story in details. 1953, Lag BaOmer, Rav Ashlag completes the publishing of his commentary to the Zohar. He goes to Meiron, the place of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he makes a big celebration over there. And he gives a speech. A year later, he passes on. On Yom Kippur, 54, he passes on. That was his legacy. That was his will. That speech on Lag BaOmer of 53. And he says, it's a big article today, but we're just going to the stuff that just relate to what we're saying. And he says as follows. He says, since there is one condition for redemption, it says in the Zohar, it says in many other places. The spread of the wisdom and the teachings of the Zohar, this is a condition. Because it says in the Zohar, Parashat Naso, that Moses appears to Rabbi Shimon and says, Behai chibura dilach, yifkun bnei Yisrael min galuta berachamim. With this book of yours, the Zohar, the children of Israel are going to come out of exile with mercy. The Zohar is the protection, and the Zohar is the guarantee for the redemption. Now, so Rav Ashlag is saying, the fact that there is a first time in history, there is a translation and a commentary of the whole Zohar that never been before. He wrote that and completed that on that time. That was the publishing of the Zohar. That was thousands and thousands of pages. The Zohar is like, you know, 20-something volumes. It's the 7,000 pages. Okay? That's a lot. Now, Rav Aslak talks about it like we got a gift. He didn't say he made the commentary. He said that the Arizal came into him and dictated. Now, I've seen many of the original writings, manuscript of Rabbi Aslak. It doesn't look like somebody translates a text. It looks like a dictation. There are no erased words. Thousands of pages, and it's clear words. Very clear. You know, somebody is making a translation. So he writes, he erases, he adds a word. No, it's like a dictation. And now, I met Rabbi Ashlag's daughter by his tomb in Haram Nuchot. And she told me, he would just, in the end of his days, he wrote so much, his hand was, he couldn't even move his fingers. He would still sit, they would put a cushion under his elbow, and then stick the pen in his hand, and he would push the hand forward, and the pen wrote. That's how he wrote, like something pushed his hand and made it happen. It was like he was like a robot, writing his commentary on the Zohar. So that's how his daughter told me about how he wrote. It's like it was totally illogical. Now, and he says that the fact that if it says that the whole redemption depends on the Zohar, now it's the first time in history that everyone can take the Zohar and learn. Never happened before. That means, he says, today, it's the first time that the whole Zohar is being explained. He says, till now, he says, most of the big parts and the important part of the Zohar, it was not translated, maybe 10% of it. The rest was totally misunderstood. And he says, "Bedoreinu ze zachinu leperusha sulam." In this generation, we merited the commentary on the Zohar, which is an explanation and commentary on the whole Zohar. Ve'esh ladat, we have to understand that spiritual issues are not like physical issues. In a physical world, when you give, somebody takes. Otherwise, it doesn't consider that you gave, right? When I give you something, it's not considered that I gave till you take it. Not in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, it's two different stages, giving and receiving. Why? כתחילה ניתן הדבר מהשם יתברך למקבל. First, the Creator gives to the recipient. ובנתינה זו נותן לו רק הזדמנות לקבל. And that giving is just giving the recipient the opportunity to receive. אבל עוד לא קיבל כלום. But the person did not get anything yet. עד שיתקדש ויתאר תרקרו. He has to purify himself, sanctify himself, prepare himself, till he is a real vessel to get, to absorb. אז זוכה לקבל הדבר. Only then he has the merit to receive. באופן שמזמן הנתינה עד זמן הקבלה יכול להתעכב זמן מרובה. So we can understand between giving and receiving could be a long time. Example. What happened on Shavuot? It's called Matan Torah. How do you translate Matan Torah into Hebrew, into English? The giving of the Torah. Why the giving of the Torah? Because the Creator gave us the Torah. We did not receive yet. It's there just on a potential state. Why potential state? Because Etz Chaim Mila Machzikim Ba. It's a tree of life to whoever is really receiving it. What does it mean? Whoever achieves the receiving of the Torah achieves eternity. Did we achieve that level? Not yet. So that's why it's called Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, not the receiving of the Torah. There was only one time that we received the Torah. Purim. When it says Ki imu v'kiblu, when it says that the Jews established and received, and kiblu how? It says kiblu kuf bet lamed, without a vav. Kiblu as one person, like on Mount Sinai, as one person. That was, and all the ones who were participating in this miracle of Purim, all of them completed their tikkun. They didn't come back anymore. They just went to heaven. Okay, but the rest of us,
We did not receive the Torah yet. We just were given.
So, and that means, ולפיכך כמו שבשלמות השגה לא זכינו עוד לזמן קבלה, לזמן נתינה. Same thing. This is the time the Zohar was given to us. Mashiach times have arrived. If the Creator gave us the Zohar and the commentary, Mashiach times have arrived. Now it will take time till we really take it and apply it. And he says, I'll give you an example. The example is, כי העובדה שהקדוש ברוך הוא הוציא ארצנו הקדושה מרשות הנוכרים והחזירה לנו, the fact that God took the Holy Land from other nations and gave it to us. בכל זאת עדיין לא קיבלנו ארץ לרשותנו, but we still don't have the country. God gave us the country, we don't have it yet. How do we know? It's not time of receiving. We did not receive. שהרי אין לנו עצמאות כלכלית. We are not really independent. Are we really independent economically? And especially culturally? No. אין עצמאות מדינית בלי עצמאות כלכלית. Without economical independence, you don't have political independence. As long as you're dependent on other nations, you're still not independent. ועוד הרבה מזה, כי אין גאולת הגוף לגאולת הנפש. More than that, the bodies are redeemed, but the souls are not. How do we know? כל עוד שרוב בני הארץ שבויים בתרבויות הזרות של האומות, הרי גם הגופות שבויים תחת הכוחות הנוכרים. You want to know why Israel is not really independent? Because the minds are still assimilated in foreign nations and foreign civilizations and foreign cultures. And you see in Israel still many Israelis that are totally assimilated in other cultures and civilizations. If this mind is assimilated and enslaved, then the body will slave. And then we ask, why is it that the Israeli government is not doing this and this and this? Aren't we independent? Says Rav Ashlag, no, you are not. As long as you're not spiritually independent, you're not politically independent. First, the spiritual independence comes. Only then the political independence can arrive.
והמופת, and the proof is, שאין שום אדם מתרגש כלל מן הגאולה כמו שהיה צריך להיות בזמן הגאולה אחרי 2000 שנה.
We don't see people in Israel so excited from redemption like you should be after 2000 years.
Not just this, that people of the exile are not so excited from that and not coming en masse into Israel,
אלא חלק גדול מאותם שנגלו וכבר יושבים בתוכנו,
many of them that were redeemed and are already living among us in Israel, they can't wait to go back to Germany, to Poland, to America, to the countries they came from. Like, is that redemption? No way. We're not there yet.
אלא כבר מצפים וכאילו נהנה להיפטר מהגאולה.
They want to get rid of that redemption. No, we don't want to live in Israel. Oh, it's a tough place, it's a tough this, there are wars. I want to be, you know, to live in peace somewhere in a place that nobody bothers me and it's comfortable and so on. Why do you have to live in a country that is so stressed out all the time? Is that redemption? No, they just approved the redemption did not come yet.
So, that's a proof. The same way the Zohar was given to us. But do we grab it and use it? Same thing. The land of Israel was given to us. Because there's no other way to explain how there is a Jewish independent state in Israel, unless what Rabbi Ashlag is saying. God took it away from other nations and gave it to us. Because it's illogical. Whoever has a mind and a heart sees that. Whoever cannot see that, he is blind to other things also. Right? So, we don't own that land anymore. Not yet. It was God gave it to us. We did not receive it yet. We did not manifest that reception. And we do not enjoy it yet. We don't feel like we're independent.
אלא שבנדינה זו נתן לנו הקדוש ברוך הוא את ההזדמנות לגאולה.
By the establishing of the state of Israel, God gave us the opportunity for a redemption. It's not a redemption yet. So how? We have to purify ourselves, to sanctify ourselves. And then the temple will be built, and we will have that land for us, which is not now. ואז נחוש ונרגיש בשמחת הגאולה. Only then we will feel the happiness of redemption. אבל כל עוד שלא באנו לזה, as long as we are not in that level of state of mind, שום דבר לא נשתנה, nothing was changed. אין הפרש בנימוסי הרצתה מכפי שהייתה תחת ידי זרים, הן במשפט, הן בכלכלה, הן בעבודת השם. The country today, after the establishment of the state, is the same law, the same rules, the same behavior as it was before. ואין לנו אלא הזדמנות לגאולה. This is an opportunity for redemption that we have to take that opportunity. So we know this is the generation of Mashiach. But the generation of Mashiach has one condition, which is what she says in many places, the wisdom, the knowledge, shlemut asaga, the big spiritual perception. When we reach that kind of maturity of spiritual perception of life, then we will really feel the real redemption. Thank you so much. And of course, how would that happen? Studying Kabbalah and the Zohar.
You've just listened to another lecture from Live Kabbalah. This is Joel Yudkevich. Thousands of people use Live Kabbalah materials every month in order to improve their lives using the Zohar, the Ari, and other treasures of the great Kabbalists. The Zohar, Parashat Terumah, teaches that when a person wants to transform to a higher level and redeem himself from the old one, that cannot be done for free. Only levels of impurity can be given for free. Most of our materials are open for everyone. However, whoever is on a spiritual journey knows that giving is receiving. Please donate to Live Kabbalah so you can get the most out of the treasures we bring you. Donations can be made according to the instructions on the donation page on Live Kabbalah site. Thank you again.